stop the rain from falling down?
How can you stop the sun from shining? What makes the
pretty fitting song from the Bee Gees, How Can You Mend a Broken Heart? Fitting because we're talking about heartbreak right now and how it can affect your emotional and your physical health. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Guy Winch. Back with us, he's a licensed psychologist and author. He's a member of the American Psychological Association. And as we talk with Guy, I hope you'll join in. Someone in your life who's struggling with loss of a romantic relationship, maybe loss of a pet. What questions do you have about helping get through this? Give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Guy Winch, welcome back. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Great to see you again, and thanks for having me.
How did you become interested in heartbreak?
Well, I'm a therapist, and I think there's not a therapist who doesn't come across heartbreak. And I was seeing so many times that my patients, the people I worked with, when they would get into relationships or when they would get heartbroken, they absolutely had no clue how to heal. They didn't know what was normative. They thought they were going crazy. And I realized they really needed tools for managing this. And it's one of those topics that, you know, we didn't hear a word about in graduate school. Like, no one teaches you as a therapist, here's the class about heartbreak. There isn't one. And so I just slowly over time started coming up with my own tools and techniques and approaches, and then that turned into a TED Talk and a book, etc.
Sometimes you hear a sad story about someone supposedly dying from heartbreak. Is that possible?
I don't think it's possible to die from heartbreak per se. I mean, there are certain conditions where there's a medical condition that can mimic a heart attack, which can be triggered by heartbreak. Those are quite rare. But heartbreak can sideline you entirely. It can make you entirely non-functional. And by the way, at any age, this is not something that, you know, sidelines the teens and the young adults, and we as older adults are immune to. At any age, I've worked with people of all ages who, when they became heartbroken, literally stopped to function, couldn't leave their beds, couldn't go to work. It's a terrible acute pain that people go through.
Is it in the brain? Is that what doing it? Or, I mean, probably in part at least, but are other parts of the body are affected?
Well, the brain is involved in everything that happens with the body. But what's interesting is that when they do brain scans of people who are heartbroken, they find that very similar pathways in the brain and very similar systems get triggered, as are triggered when heroin addicts are withdrawing from heroin.
Oh.
It creates this kind of a desperation of needing that person and needing contact with them. And you see the same kind of desperation that you see with heroin addicts when they are withdrawing, except heroin addicts know that they're withdrawing from a drug, so their behavior is understood to them. Their level of desperation is very clear to them why they have it. Heartbroken people often find themselves behaving in such difficult and strange ways to them, unfamiliar ways to them, and they think, oh, I must be going crazy. This is completely not like me, because they don't understand what's actually happening in their brain to cause it.
And I bet there are different kinds of heartbreak. I mean, because I've been through a couple of different kinds myself. You know, there's the romantic one that I'm betting that a lot of us have gone through. And then there's the one I was kind of really almost heartbroken over, the loss of a pet.
Yeah, and I actually, in my book, I included those two topics because they have one thing in common. They are forms of grief that can have a huge impact on the person, but they're disenfranchised. No one is going to work and saying, I need a week off because my cat died. It would not be a good career move. And no one is going to work and saying, I need 2 days off because my girlfriend dumped me. If you're getting divorced, that's legit. But if it's just a regular breakup, it's not. And yet the impact on us can be very severe, and the grief we go through can be very severe. Some people, all they have in their life is a cherished pet. That is their companion, their family member, the person that greets them at the end of the day. And when that pet dies, it is a terrible, terrible loss. And yet, it's just not something that we think about enough and consider seriously enough when we should.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And society, I think, treats pain. If you break your arm, your people treat you one way, but I'm not so sure that it's the other. With a broken heart, it's a different kind of circumstance.
Look, all emotional pain is invisible, and that makes it something you have to kind of take on faith. You know, it's people don't respond well to emotional pain. Many people don't, because they don't know how to respond. They're not sure what to say. You know, somebody breaks their arm, I'm so sorry. But they also know that once the arm is in a cast, it's not hurting anymore. Heartbreak can linger, and grief like that can linger for hours and days and weeks. And so people don't have a clear idea of how best to respond, how to help the person beyond saying, like, so how you're doing, you know, but usually they're doing terribly.
Yeah. Reed in Eau Claire has a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Reed.
Hello. I wanted to share that what I've learned from heartbreak is that self-awareness has been incredibly important, where trying to focus on other activities means that oftentimes the grief can come out in interesting ways, whereas simply sitting down, writing down the thoughts and sharing out loud the grief can often provide a fertile soil for growth, where I appreciate the relationships in the future more rather than becoming sort of cynical.
Hmm. Reed, thanks for calling. Comment on that, Guy.
Okay, so Reed, great. Three things you mentioned there, each of is important. One, you said, you know, sometimes doing other things. So yes, distraction is useful, certainly at the beginning, because you want to get your mind off it. Otherwise, you're just thinking about it all the time. And then you spoke about journaling, writing about it, that oftentimes we process our thoughts and our feelings by writing things down, and it can help us reach conclusions. And, you know, usually in the initial throes of heartbreak, you're just trying to deal with the pain. But a little bit later on, yes, you should start trying to consider, what can I take away from this? What can I learn for my future relationships? And then you mentioned talking about it. And social and emotional support are also extremely important. Those are very important ingredients to help us move forward and get through the difficult, painful aftermath and the potential for growth that happens afterwards. So in that one comment there, you had three very, very useful approaches to healing from heartbreak.
Yeah, Reed, thank you very much for calling. And I would invite you to join in as well with your own thoughts. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@wpr.org. Well, it sounded like he has made some good progress in this, but I'm wondering about mistakes. What are some of the mistakes that you can make when you're heartbroken that makes the pain last longer?
Okay, so the most common one, and this is, it's very difficult to not fall down this rabbit hole, but the most common one is to keep stalking the other person on social media, to keep looking through the memorabilia, whether they're photos or videos, to keep thinking about that person. Because the way we do that is we tend to do that in idealized ways. When we're heartbroken, we don't think of all the terrible times we've had together. We don't think about the really bad fight we had just the week before, or all the disappointments, all the compromises. We tend to think of the ideal moments. We fantasize about all those romantic times, and we look at the pictures of when we're happiest, which are highly curated. And all that does is it presents a skewed version of the loss to us, which makes it sound like a much bigger loss to our unconscious mind, and that amplifies the pain. So it's very natural to idealize the person who broke our heart in the aftermath of heartbreak. And what I recommend to people is that they make a list on their phone of all the ways the person wasn't great, all the things they didn't like about them, all the compromises they made, all the disappointing, unfortunate, bad times they had together. And when their mind takes them to these idealized, romanticized versions of, oh, but they were so great. Take out your phone and balance out that perception. Don't vilify them, but just balance it out by reminding yourself, no, they weren't that great. They were okay, but there was a lot that wasn't okay. At least if you're grieving, grieve a more accurate recollection and rendition of the person and of the relationship.
You know, we've all heard it. You may have mentioned it. That time will heal a broken heart. How do you feel about that? Saying, well, you know, somebody, you're talking to somebody about it, and they say, well, time, you know, time's going to heal that.
You can wait for time. It can be a long road, and you can make a lot of mistakes along the way. But there are actual things that you can do to accelerate the healing. As your first guest said, Reed, to even learn from it, but healing emotional wounds in general is something I'm trying to teach people. Is an active process. It's not a passive one. It's not just waiting it out. There are things you need to do. Like if you have a cut on your arm, you don't just let it heal. If it's small, you do, but usually you want to put something on it. You want to cover it. You know, there are certain things you can do to accelerate physical healing, and there's many things you can do to accelerate emotional healing. You just have to be more proactive and knowledgeable and sophisticated about what you can do and what's useful to do. So in heartbreak, for example, what I'm suggesting there with the list of the bad stuff to balance it out, that will shorten the time that you are in pain. It will also shorten the time that you're in pain if you stop looking at their social media. People will spend hours looking at the person's social media, and it will hurt them tremendously when they do. Because what do we put on social media? Only the good stuff. You're not going to see your ex sitting at home missing you. They're not going to put that on social media. You'll see them out with friends. So while you're at home, you know, like crying into a bucket, and you're like, how can they be out with friends when I'm in so much pain? You know, like it's just going to make it hurt more. So the idea of no contact is actually really important, at least at the beginning. And you know, people say to me, well, can't we be friends? And I'm like, sure, but not now. You cannot be friends with someone who's just broke your heart, because their presence and their friendship is going to extend the heartbreak and make it hurt. Once you get over them, if you feel compelled to be their friend, do so. But most people, once they're over them, are like, I don't need to be their friend. Exactly. So don't. You know, you can't do friendship right away. You have to get over the person, and it requires distance.
Is that true as well with divorce? You get a broken heart over divorce?
It's true about divorce. It's more complicated with divorce. It's more complicated when you have children and you have to be in touch. It's more complicated when you work in the same workplace or when you live in the same neighborhood and you're actually going to see each other, because then it's difficult to get that distance. But you have to try and get it where you can. And you have to try and, you know, because again, the reminders are going to be very difficult. There's one other thing that happens that I want to explain to people that befuddles a lot of people, and I think it's critical that people understand. When someone decides to leave, certainly a marriage, but even a dating relationship, they often don't do it on a whim. They often, you know, it's a process of contemplation where they finally arrive at some point at the conclusion, no, I want to break up. I don't want to stay with the person. Great. That is not the moment in which they walk into the, you know, person while they're having breakfast and say, right, all right, decided I'm leaving. It's not how that works. People are much more thoughtful and strategic about when they're actually going to make the announcement and leave. And so they sometimes will sit on it for weeks and even months, because they actually did, you know, let's not do it right before the holidays, or let's not do it before their big presentation at work, or the kids are coming to visit, let's at least wait for that visit to be over. They'll be strategic about it. In the meantime, they are moving on and they are disconnecting emotionally, but they're faking it with a person because they don't want to let the cat out of the bag. They want to do it in the right time. But then when that time comes, they're already so far along in the process, they seem like, how have they gotten over me so quickly? Well, they've been thinking about it for months. You're new to this realization. They're not.
Dot in Chippewa Falls, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I just want to share my idea on how to deal with people who have passed.
Okay.
Okay. I've done quite a bit of eulogies for many family members and friends, and it seems to help. I know it's hard for people to go up and do a eulogy, but once you get up there and speak in front of all those people, it's more likely somebody else is going to stand up and say something about the person that passed. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I still have a hard time with, I still have a hard time with so many family and friends that went to heaven. But now if I don't do a eulogy, I just don't feel right.
Huh. Well, Guy, comment.
Look, that's a very good point about grief in general. But you doing a eulogy is not something everybody has the opportunity to do in that public forum. But that doesn't mean you can't do one if that's helpful for you, that you can't do one privately. It can be some kind of ritual that you do in which you actually write something, write a eulogy about the person who you've lost, and you can go to their grave, or you can go to some kind of site that's meaningful if you can't be at their gravesite, you know, in person, and you can read it to them in absentia, obviously, but you can write a eulogy and read it if that's a ritual that helps you move past grief. It's one you don't, you know, if you can do it publicly, terrific. But if you don't have the opportunity, you can still avail yourself of that tool, of that, you know, psychological tool, and do it privately. And it's going to be very impactful to do that.
Yeah, thank you very much. Sometimes people get over a relationship by starting a new one. How can you tell? You know, and that may not always be the best approach. How can you tell if you're really over the old one?
Look, I'm going to be a little crude, if I may. When people say to me, how do you know, how do I know if I'm ready to, you know, start dating again or even to, you know, have sex again? I say, look, if you can get through it without crying or vomiting, you might be ready. Because essentially, if you wait until you feel ready, you waited too long. Part of getting over is introducing the option and the idea that there are other people out there, that there might be another relationship for you. And it's very hard to know when you're exactly ready for that. So I say err on the side of maybe too soon. You'll know if you're going to a date and you're sitting with someone and you cannot listen to a word they're saying. All you're thinking about is your ex and you're just not present at all. Okay, too soon. But if you can get through it, and if you can just, okay, let me just see if this person is interesting, even if I'm not emotionally available, even if I'm not really, you know, going to, you know, go for them at the moment, let me just have a conversation and remind myself what it's like to be on a date, or remind myself what it's like to ask someone out, or to go out and get to know someone, that can really help with the healing. And so I'm all for it. Like, if you're not sure, try. And if you can get through it, maybe do it slowly. But do it. If you're really not ready, you'll know, like, oh, no, I couldn't even think of it. But sometimes we're ready before we realize, and that's what I'm urging here.
Let's say you're friends with someone who's experiencing a heartbreak. What's the best way to support them?
Look, they are in a lot of pain. And so the best way to support them is to, if you're not sure, by the way, this is true about heartbreak and about grief and about somebody who might be going through cancer or anything. I ask people, if it's a good friend, I say, hey, you're going through this. My tendency is to want to call you every day and say, how are you doing? I know that might be too much for you. What's the best way I can be there for you? What's the cadence of reaching out that would work for you? Should I check in daily right now? Do you want me to come over? What would be helpful? To have a talk, to take you out for a movie, to distract you? I literally will ask the person, what would you find most helpful? Most people will be able to tell you. But that question is showing concern, and it's showing a motivation to help the other person, and that alone is soothing. But make yourself available. Say, like, look, if you want to just talk about that, talk about the heartbreak and just go on and on about it, I'm here. I can be an ear for you. But if you're not sure, it's always good to ask.
And when's the time to seek professional help?
There's something called complicated grief. If it's been 6 months, in general, for grief, or a year, and you're really not moving forward, in other words, you're really feeling the same thing, you're stuck as you were a year ago. Not that you're better, but not quite better, but you're really not getting better. You've had this breakup, you're not dating, it's been you know, 6 months, a year, you know, you're still ruminating about the person, still regaling your friends with the same old quandary, like, why did they do this or this? Then maybe you need to seek professional help, because this is a process of healing. When it comes to emotions, should be similar to what we experience physically. In other words, you want to see a gradual easing of the pain. You want to see a gradual return to full functionality. You want to see an incline of getting better. And if you're on a plateau and staying there, you might need a little professional help.
You're an advocate for emotional health. What does it mean to be emotionally healthy?
It means the same thing as it does to be physically healthy. It means to be able to be aware of what our emotions are, to be able to process them, to be able to treat emotional wounds, and to have a certain sophistication of understanding of how we're feeling, of what we need to address our emotional needs. You know, sometimes I say to people, well, tell me what your emotional needs are, and they can't even really identify it. But do you need more contact, more connection? Do you need more support, more validation? Do you need, you know, like, again, there's an array of needs that we have, but we have to actually check in with ourselves and ask ourselves the question once in a while, which we're not used to doing. You know, when we have an ache or pain, we know it because it's an ache or pain, but we can say to ourselves, how am I feeling this week, this month, today? What's missing in my life? What do I wish I had more of in terms of my friendships, in terms of how I feel about myself and my self-esteem, my productivity, my efficacy in the world, my hopefulness? All of those things are things that we can address, and if we find lacking, to seek how to improve.
Well, this has been wonderful. I think our next guest is quite a bit of that in her new book. But your new book is coming out in February.
It is,
and I hope we can get you on to talk about the book when it comes out.
I would be delighted to come back.
Well, it's always a delight to have you, Guy, and I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. And we'll probably see you in February.
I hope so, and it's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Guy Winch, licensed psychologist. He's a member of the American Psychological Association, and his new book coming out in February is Mind Over Grind, How to Break Free When Work Hijacks Your Life. It'll be published by Simon & Schuster, and we'll talk about it. Coming up next, another book that we're going to deal with, relating to our Wisconsin state parks, but the title, Time, Beauty, and Grief, A Hike Through Wisconsin's 50 State Parks, and it's a lot more than that. That next, I'm Larry Mueller. My brother.